Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Story time.
All right, first off, let me tell you a little bit of history about me. At the time of this event, my friend, Brian, and I were 14. Brian lived beside a very large forest. Well, Brian and I tended to go exploring a lot whenever we got the chance. Now we have been doing this since we were about 10 years old, so we never really saw any danger in this. We just did it so we had something to do. It was nearly sundown and Brian wanted to go further out than what we usually did. I didn't know how far he wanted to go, so I just went with it. We followed our usual path for around 15 minutes until I started to notice that I didn't recognize where we were going. I thought that this is what Brian was talking about, going further than usual, but he just kept on walking. After another 15 minutes of going on this unknown path until we came up on this abandoned, beat up RV in the middle of the woods. I mean, it looked like a dozen guys with baseball bats just gave it their all on the shack. There were small holes throughout the whole RV. Almost all the windows were broken and there was dirt all over the RV. But the most strangest thing about it was the fruit on the ground. It was everywhere and they were all eaten. Some of the fruit were fresher than others. In fact, some looked as if they were eaten a couple hours ago. Anyways, you couldn't step anywhere without stepping on this weird fruit. I couldn't even identify what type of fruit it was. It was greenish, dark black in the shape of a tangerine, but the texture of the fruit is what made it indistinguishable. It was unbelievably smooth. Almost as if it were liquid. By this time the sun had just dipped over the horizon, so it was getting really dark in the woods. As soon as I saw the RV, I felt this chill sensation that I have never felt before. It felt as if I just jumped into the frozen seas of Antarctica. I had chill bumps all over my body, and this all happened less than a second. I look over at Brian, and just from reading his expression, I knew he felt the same sensation. As I was just about to ask what was wrong, he just jerked his head, staring in the direction behind me. On instinct, I did the same, but I saw nothing. I asked him what he saw, but he said it was nothing, just shadows playing tricks on him. But I knew that whatever he thought he saw put him on edge. He jerked his head every 5 seconds. After about a minute of looking around, I turned back toward the RV. Now I'm a very curious person, and I wanted to see what was in that RV. I started to make my way forward over the sea of this weird already eaten fruit. My friend Brian grabbed my hand and pulled me back. I looked at Brian, and he looked like he was on the edge of freaking out. He told me to not go in that RV. However, being the stubborn idiot I am, I didn't listen to him. I walked forward a little freaked out myself, because I knew there was something not right about this place. I stopped in front of the door and laid my hand on the door handle. As I was about to open it, Brian squeaked out from behind me, "Please don't, let's just go back to the house." I thought about this for a second, but curiosity won. I opened the door and peered in. Inside was so unexpected that I had to look twice to actually believe it. It was a regular RV, almost nothing seemed strange on the inside. I was almost disappointed because I was expecting something very strange, but turned out to be a regular RV. I chuckled quietly to myself and walked back outside. I turned around to tell Brian it was nothing, but when I saw him, I stopped dead in my tracks. There was a humanoid shadowy figure standing around 6 foot to 7 foot tall, was standing behind Brian almost 20 feet away. I was paralyzed and shocked, and it must have shown in my face because Brian turned around and saw the figure too. But instead of coming to me or telling me to run, that little bastard bolted without me running in the general direction of his house. I just stood there still petrified in shock. It was completely dark outside, so I couldn't see it well enough to identify anything about this thing. After about 5 seconds, I came back to reality and got the F out of there in the direction that Brian took. Now I'm a track champion, so I consider myself a very fast runner, if I do say so myself. As I was running, I could hear something chasing me. Now I didn't see what was chasing me, so I didn't know if it was the same thing as I saw before, though I knew that whatever was chasing me was very large and humanoid because I heard the pattern of its footsteps, and it was definitely two legs. But whatever it was very fast. I could hear it get closer and closer to me until it was about 10 feet behind me, judging by the sound. Now after about 5 seconds I heard the footsteps die down, but I didn't dare turn around. I kept on running until I caught up with Brian. As soon as I reached him I finally turned around, but I didn't see anything. It was too dark to make out anything more than 40 feet away. As I was searching for the pursuer, I got the feeling that we were being watched. Now I know that we all get this feeling all the time, but this was different. I knew I was being watched by someone or something. Brian must have sensed it too, because he said, "Let's keep on running to the house." After around 5 minutes, we saw his house and burst through the door and straight to his room. We didn't sleep at all that night, and we never adventured out in the woods again. After 2 years, Brian and his family moved to another house. And they live happily in their new home. But what happened in those woods still haunts me today. I always thought, what would have happened if that thing caught me? I leave these questions unanswered because I don't like to dwell on that distant memory too much. I don't believe in paranormal things, however, whatever that thing wasn't human. I was working for a company based out of Hopkinsville, Kentucky, in the Fayette, North Carolina office. The Fayette, North Carolina office was being downsized and my position was being moved to Hopkinsville. No problem. Neither state is my home state, and my wife is from Iraq, so no real ties. And it gives her a chance to experience other places. So we take a trip and let her see the town. I get a room at the Hampton Inn Suites, where I have stayed enough to get platinum status. Nice, clean hotel with a nice little Mexican restaurant. You can walk too and have a margarita. We got room 103. We drive around and eat, unpack, shower, and watch TV. We turn off the light and everything is cool. She's sleeping and the bathroom light comes back on. It has a motion sensor on it, so I get back up, cycle the light, and go to bed. At about 2 a.m., the light comes back on and I get up, cycle the light, and shut the door. No problem, I'll just tell the maintenance in the morning. At about 3 a.m., I have what I think is a nightmare. A rolling, black mass covers the floor to the ceiling and comes out of the bathroom reaching for me. About 5 feet from the bed, I wake up screaming, crawling backward towards the headboard. My wife doesn't wake up, which is weird. I have a Surefire flashlight on the nightstand, so I fire it up and nothing is there. I can see the bathroom light is on again. I go back to sleep writing it off as due to stress. I tell maintenance about the light issue. I come back from my office, and my wife says they came by and replaced the switch. Problem solved, right? No. Not really. We were there 3 days and I had the same exact experience each night and my wife woke up one of the nights moaning in her sleep. I didn't say anything about what I was seeing and she just said she wasn't sleeping well. She hates hotels, is from Iraq, and is not really used to a hotel stay. So once again, I kept my mouth shut not wanting to look like an idiot. We got back to North Carolina just fine and we were watching a ghost show on television, and I said, "Babe, when we were staying at Hopkinsville, did anything weird happen while you were sleeping?" She said, "Yeah." I asked, "What happened?" She said, "I saw a black cloud that was taller than you. That looked like it had snakes in it and arms that reached towards the bed." I explained that I had seen a very similar thing. And she was like, "I was scared to say anything because I was afraid you'd laugh at me." This was real to both of us. I came back to stay a couple of months later by myself and requested the same room, just to see if it would happen again. When I requested the room, I was told it was being remodeled because of water damage. That's plausible. 2 months after this, I was meeting one of my editors from North Carolina to help her get checked in and go out to eat. Knowing the front desk folks, I asked about the room again. I asked if she could have room 301. She smiled at me and said, "We turned that into a storage because of a parking lot noise." I asked, "Are you sure people haven't complained about something else?" She just smiled at us. So draw your conclusions. In my younger days, my idea of a vacation was a prospecting trip where I could be by myself and think over my past mistakes and plan what would be best to try next. I have always followed logging and construction work. This time I had worked for over 1 year on a construction job and thought a good vacation was in order. BC is famous for lost gold mines. One is supposed to be at the head of Toba Inlet. Why not look for this mine and have a vacation at the same time? I took the Union steamship boat to Lund, BC. From there I hired an old Indian to take me to the head of Toba Inlet. This old Indian was a very talkative old gentleman. He told me stories about gold brought out by a white man from this lost mine. This white man was a very heavy drinker, spent his money freely in saloons. But he had no trouble getting more money. He would be away a few days, then come back with a bag of gold. But one time he went to his mine and never came back. Some people said a Sasquatch had killed him. At that time I had never heard of Sasquatch. So I asked what kind of an animal he called a Sasquatch. The Indian said, "They have hair all over their bodies, but they are not animals. They are people. Big people living in the mountains. My uncle saw the tracks of one that were 2 feet long. One old Indian saw one over 8 feet tall." Albert Osmani told the Indian I didn't believe in their old fables about mountain giants. It might have been some thousands of years ago, but not nowadays. Original writing. The Indian said, "There may not be many, but they still exist. We arrived at the head of the inlet at 4 p.m. I made camp at the mouth of a creek." The Indian was in no hurry, he had to wait for the high tide to go back. That would be about 7 p.m. I tried to catch some trout in the creek, but no luck. The Indian had supper with me, and I told him to look out for me in about 3 weeks. I would be camping at the same spot when I came back. He promised to tell his friend to look out for me too. I spent most of the forenoon looking for a trail but found none, except for a hogback running down to within about 100 feet of the beach. So I swamped out a trail from there, got back to my camp about 3 p.m. that afternoon and made up my pack to be ready in the morning. My equipment consisted of one 30-30 Winchester rifle. I had a special homemade prospecting pick, axe on one end, and pick on the other. I had a leather case for this pick which fastened to my belt, also my sheath knife. Next morning, I took my rifle with me, but left my equipment at the camp. I decided to look around for some deer trail to lead me up into the mountains. On the way up the inlet, I had seen a pass in the mountainside that I wanted to go through, to see what was on the other side. The storekeeper at Lund was cooperative. He gave me some cans for my sugar, salt, and the first page of Osman's handwritten account of his kidnapping. Click to enlarge matches to keep them dry. My grub consisted mostly of canned stuff, except for a side of bacon, a bag of beans, 4 pounds of prunes and 6 packets of macaroni, 3 pounds of pancake flour, cheese, and 6 packets Rye King hard tack, 3 rolls of snuff, 1 quart sealer of butter and 2 1-pound cans of milk. I had 2 boxes of shells for my rifle. The storekeeper gave me a biscuit tin. I put a few things in that and cached it under a windfall, so I would have it when I came back here waiting for a boat to bring me out. My sleeping bag I rolled up and tied on top of my pack sack, together with my ground sheet, small frying pan, and 1 aluminum pot that held about 1 gallon. As my canned food was used, I would get plenty of empty cans to cook with. Affidavit ow, the following morning I had an early breakfast, made up my pack, and started up this hogback. My pack must have been at least 80 pounds, besides my rifle. After 1 hour, I had to rest. I kept resting and climbing all that morning. About 2 p.m. I came to a flat place below a rock bluff. There was a bunch of willow in one place. I made a wooden spade and started digging for water. About 1 foot down I got seepings of water, so I decided to camp here for the night, and scout around for the best way to get on from here. I must have been up near 1,000 feet. There was a most beautiful view over the islands and the strait, tugboats with log booms, and fishing boats going in all directions, a lovely spot. I spent the following day prospecting round. But no sign of minerals. I found a deer trail leading towards this pass that I had seen on my way up the inlet. The following morning I started out early, while it was cool. It was steep climbing with my heavy pack. After 3 hours climb, I was tired and stopped to rest. On the other side of a ravine from where I was resting was a yellow spot below some small trees. I moved over there and started digging for water. I found a small spring and made a small trough from cedar bark and got a small amount of water, had my lunch and rested here till evening. This was not a good camping site, and I wanted to get over the pass. I saved all the water I got from this spring, as I might not find water on the other side of this pass. However, I made it over the pass late that night. Now I had downhill and good going, but I was hungry and tired, so I camped at the first bunch of trees I came to. I had about 1 gallon of water, so I was good for one day. Of course, I could see rough country ahead of me, and I was trying to size up the terrain, what direction I would take from here. Towards the west would lead to low land and some other inlet, so I decided to go in a northeast direction, but I had to find a good way to get down. I left my pack and went east along a ledge but came to an abrupt end, was 200 or 300 feet straight down. I came back, found a place only about 50 feet down to a ledge that looked like good going for as far as I could see. I got down on this ledge all right and had good going and slight downhill all day. I must have made 10 miles when I came to a small spring and a big black hemlock tree. This was a lovely campsite. I spent 2 days here just resting and prospecting. There were some minerals but nothing interesting. The first night here I shot a small deer, buck, so I had plenty of good meat and good water. The weather was very hot in the daytime, so I was in no hurry, as I had plenty of meat. When I finally left this camp, I got into plenty of trouble. First, I got into a box canyon, and had to come back almost where I started this morning, when I found a deer trail down to another ledge, and had about 2 miles of good going. Then I came to another canyon, and on the other side was a yellow patch of grass that meant water. I made it down into this canyon, and up on the other side, but it was tough climbing. I was tired, and when I finally got there I dug a pit for water and got plenty for my needs. I only stayed here one night, it was not a good camping site. Next day I had hard going. I made it over a well-timbered ridge into another canyon. This canyon was not so steep on the west side, but the east side was almost plumb. I would have to go downhill to find a way out. I was now well below the timber line. I found a fair campsite that night, but moved on the next morning. It was a very hot day, not a breath of wind. Late that day I found an exceptionally good campsite. It was 2 good-sized cypress trees growing close together and near a rock wall with a nice spring lust below these trees. I intended to make this my permanent camp. I cut lots of brush from my bed between these trees. I rigged up a pole from this rock wall to hang my pack sack on, and I arranged some fiat rocks for my fireplace for cooking. I had a really classy setup. I shot a grouse just before I came to this place. Too late to roast that tonight, I would do that tomorrow. And that's when things began to happen. I am a heavy sleeper, not much disturbs me after I go to sleep, especially on a good bed like I had now. Next morning I noticed things had been disturbed during the night. But nothing missing that I could see. I roasted my grouse on a stick for my breakfast. About 9 a.m. I started out prospecting. I always carried my rifle with me. Your rifle is the most important part of your equipment. I started out in a southwest direction below the way I had come in the night before. There were some signs, minerals, but nothing important. I shot a squirrel in the afternoon, and got back to camp at 7 p.m. I fried the squirrel on a stick, opened a can of peas and carrots for my supper, and gathered up dry branches from trees. There are always dead branches of fir and hemlock under trees, near the ground. They make good fuel and good heat. That night I filled up the magazine of my rifle. I still had one full box of 20 shells in my pack, besides a full magazine and 6 shells in my coat pocket. That night I laid my rifle under the edge of my sleeping bag. I thought a porcupine had visited me the night before and porkies like leather, so I put my shoes in the bottom of my sleeping bag. Next morning my pack sack had been emptied out. Someone had turned the sack upside down. It was still hanging on the pole from the shoulder straps as I had hung it up. Then I noticed 1 half-pound package of prunes was missing. Also my pancake flour was missing, but my salt bag was not touched. Porkies always look for salt, so I decided it must be something else than porkies. I looked for tracks but found none. I did not think it was a bear, they always tear up and make a mess of things. I kept close to camp those days in case this visitor would come back. I climbed up on a big rock where I had a good view of the camp, but nothing showed up. I was hoping it would be a porky so I could get a good porky stew. These visits had now been going on for 3 nights. I intended to make a new campsite the following day, but I hated to leave this place. I had fixed it up so nicely, and these 2 cypress trees were bushy. It would have to be a heavy rain before I would get wet, and I had good spring water and that is hard to find. This night it was cloudy and looked like it might rain. I took special notice of how everything was arranged. I closed my pack sack, I did not undress, I only took off my shoes, put them in the bottom of my sleeping bag. I drove my prospecting pick into one of the cypress trees so I could reach it from my bed. I also put the rifle alongside me, inside my sleeping bag. I fully intended to stay awake all night to find out who my visitor was, but I must have fallen asleep. I was awakened by something picking me up. I was half asleep and at first I did not remember where I was. As I began to get my wits together, I remembered I was on this prospecting trip, and in my sleeping bag. My first thought was, it must be a snow slide, but there was no snow around my camp. Then it felt like I was tossed on horseback, but I could feel whoever it was walking. I tried to reason out what kind of animal this could be. I tried to get at my sheath knife, and cut my way out, but I was in an almost sitting position, and the knife was under me. I could not get hold of it, but the rifle was in front of me. I had a good hold of that, and had no intention to let go of it. At times I could feel my pack sack touching me, and could feel the cans in the sack touching my back. After what seemed like an hour, I could feel we were going up a steep hill. I could feel myself rise for every step. What was carrying me was breathing hard and sometimes gave a slight cough. Now, I knew this must be one of the mountain Sasquatch giants the Indian told me about. I was in a very uncomfortable position, unable to move. I was sitting on my feet, and one of the boots in the bottom of the bag was crossways with the hobnail sole up across my foot. It hurt me terribly, but I could not move. It was very hot inside. It was lucky for me this fellow's hand was not big enough to close up the whole bag when he picked me up. There was a small opening at the top. Otherwise I would have choked to death. Now he was going downhill. I could feel myself touching the ground at times, and at one time he dragged me behind him and I could feel he was below me. Then he seemed to get on level ground and was going at a trot for a long time. By this time, I had cramps in my legs. The pain was terrible. I was wishing he would get to his destination soon. I could not stand this type of transportation much longer. Now he was going uphill again. It did not hurt me so bad. I tried to estimate distance and directions. As near as I could guess, we were about 3 hours traveling. I had no idea when he started, as I was asleep when he picked me up. Finally he stopped and let me down. Then he dropped my pack sack. I could hear the cans rattle. Then I heard chatter, some kind of talk I did not understand. The ground was sloping, so when he let go of my sleeping bag, I rolled over head first downhill. I got my head out, and got some air. I tried to straighten my legs and crawl out, but my legs were numb. It was still dark, I could not see what my captors looked like. I tried to massage my legs to get some life in them, and get my shoes on. I could hear now it was at least four of them. They were standing around me and continuously chattering. I had never heard of Sasquatch before the Indian told me about them. But I knew I was right among them. But how to get away from them, that was another question. I got to see the outline of them now, as it began to get lighter. I now had circulation in my legs, but my left foot was very sore on top where it had been resting on my hobnail boots. I got my boots out from the sleeping bag and tried to stand up. I was wobbly on my feet but had a good hold of my rifle. I asked, "What you fellows worn with me?" Only some more chatter. It was getting lighter now, and I could see them quite clearly. I could make out forms of four people. Two big ones and two little ones. They were all covered with hair and no clothes on at all. I could now make out mountains all around me. I looked at my watch. It was 4:25 a.m. It was getting lighter now and I could see the people clearly. They look like a family, old man, old lady and two young ones, a boy and a girl. The boy and the girl seemed to be scared of me. The old lady did not seem too pleased about what the old man dragged home. But the old man was waving his arms and telling them all what he had in mind. They all left me then. I had my compass and my prospecting glass on strings around my neck. The compass in my left-hand shirt pocket and my glass in my right-hand pocket. I tried to reason our location, and where I was. I could see now that I was in a small valley or basin about 8 or 10 acres, surrounded by high mountains. On the southeast side there was a V-shaped opening about 8 feet wide at the bottom and about 20 feet wide at the highest point. That must be the way I came in. But how will I get out? The old man was now sitting near this opening. I moved my belongings up close to the west wall. There were two small cypress trees there, and this will do for a shelter for the time being. Until I find out what these people want with me, and how to get away from here. I emptied out my pack sack to see what I had left in the line of food. All my canned meat and vegetables were intact and I had one can of coffee. Also 3 small cans of milk, 2 packages of Rye King hardtack and my butter sealer half full of butter. But my prunes and macaroni were missing. Also my full box of shells for my rifle. I only had 6 shells beside what I had in the magazine of my rifle. I had my sheath knife but my prospecting pick was missing and my can of matches. I only had my safety box full and that held about a dozen matches. That did not worry me. I can always start a fire with my prospecting glass when shining, if I got dry wood. I wanted hot coffee, but I had no wood, also nothing around here that looked like wood. I had a good look over the valley from where I was, but the boy and the girl were always watching me from behind some juniper bush. I decided there must be some water around here. The ground was leaning towards the opening in the wall. There must be water at the upper end of this valley. There is green grass and moss along the bottom. All my utensils were left behind. I opened my coffee tin and emptied the coffee in a dish towel and tied it with the metal strip from the can. I took my rifle and the can and went looking for water. Right at the head under a cliff there was a lovely spring that disappeared underground. I got a drink, and a full can of water. When I got back the young boy was looking over my belongings, but did not touch anything. On my way back I noticed where these people were sleeping. On the east side wall of this valley was a shelf in the mountain side, with overhanging rock, looking something like a big undercut and a big tree about 10 feet deep and 30 feet wide. The floor was covered with lots of dry moss, and they had some kind of blankets woven of narrow strips of cedar bark, packed with dry moss. They looked very practical and warm, with no need of washing. The first day not much happened. I had to eat my food cold. The young fellow was coming nearer me, and seemed curious about me. My one snuff box was empty, so I rolled it towards him. When he saw it coming, he sprang up quick as a cat, and grabbed it. He went over to his sister and showed her. They found out how to open and close it. They spent a long time playing with it. Then he trotted over to the old man and showed him. They had a long chatter. Next morning, I made up my mind to leave this place, if I had to shoot my way out. I could not stay much longer. I had only enough grub to last me till I got back to Toba Inlet. I did not know the direction, but I would go downhill and I would come out near civilization someplace. I rolled up my sleeping bag, put that inside my pack sack, packed the few cans I had, swung the sack on my back, injected a shell in the barrel of my rifle and started for the opening in the wall. The old man got up, held up his hands as though he would push me back. I pointed to the opening. I wanted to go out. But he stood there pushing towards me, and said something that sounded like soka soka. I backed up to about 60 feet. I did not want to be too close, I thought, if I had to shoot my way out. A 30 to 30 might not have much effect on this fellow, it might make him mad. I only had 6 shells so I decided to wait. There must be a better way than killing him, in order to get out from here. I went back to my campsite to figure out some other way to get out. If I could make friends with the young fellow or the girl, they might help me. If I only could talk to them. Then I thought of a fellow who saved himself from a mad bull by blinding him with snuff in his eyes. But how will I get near enough to this fellow to put the snuff in his eyes? So I decided next time I give the young fellow my snuff box to leave a few grains of snuff in it. He might give the old man a taste of it. But the question is, in what direction will I go, if I should get out? I must have been near 25 miles northeast of Toba Inlet when I was kidnapped. This fellow must have traveled at least 25 miles in the 3 hours he carried me. If he went west we would be near salt water, same thing if he went south, therefore he must have gone northeast. If I then keep going south and over 2 mountains, I must hit salt water someplace between Lund and Vancouver. The following day I did not see the old lady till about 4 p.m. She came home with her arms full of grass and twigs of all kinds from spruce and hemlock as well as some kind of nuts that grow in the ground. I have seen lots of them on Vancouver Island. The young fellow went up the mountain to the east every day. He could climb better than a mountain goat. He picked some kind of grass with long sweet roots. He gave me some one day, they tasted very sweet. I gave him another snuff box with about a teaspoon of snuff in it. He tasted it, then went to the old man. He licked it with his tongue. They had a long chat. I made a dipper from a milk can. I made many dippers. You cut two slits near the top of any can, then cut a limb from any small tree, cut down back of the limb, down the stem of the tree, then taper the part you cut from the stem. Then cut a hole in the tapered part, slide the tapered part into the slit you made in the can, and you have a good handle on your can. I threw one over to the young fellow that was playing near my camp. He picked it up and looked at it, then he went to the old man and showed it to him. They had a long chatter. Then he came to me, pointed at the dipper then at his sister. I could see that he wanted one for her too. I had other peas and carrots, so I made one for his sister. He was standing only 8 feet away from me. When I had made the dipper, I dipped it in water and drank from it. He was very pleased, almost smiled at me. Then I took a chew of snuff, smacked my lips, said that's good. The young fellow pointed to the old man, said something that sounded like ook. I got the idea that the old man liked snuff, and the young fellow wanted a box for the old man. I shook my head. I motioned with my hands for the old man to come to me. I do not think the young fellow understood what I meant. He went to his sister and gave her the dipper I made for her. They did not come near me again that day. I had now been here 6 days, but I was sure I was making progress. If only I could get the old man to come over to me, get him to eat a full box of snuff that would kill him for sure, and that way kill himself, I wouldn't be guilty of murder. The old lady was a meek old thing. The young fellow was by this time quite friendly. The girl would not hurt anybody. Her chest was flat like a boy, no development like young ladies. I am sure if I could get the old man out of the way, I could easily have brought this girl out with me to civilization. But what good would that have been? I would have to keep her in a cage for public display. I don't think we have any right to force our way of life on other people, and I don't think they would like it. The noise and racket in a modern city they would not like any more than I do. The young fellow might have been between 11 to 18 years old, about 7 feet tall, and might weigh about 300 pounds. His chest would be about 50 to 55 inches. His waist about 36 to 38 inches. He had wide jaws, narrow forehead that slanted upward round at the back about 4 or 5 inches higher than the forehead. The hair on their heads was about 6 inches long. The hair on the rest of their body was short and thick in places. The women's hair was a bit longer on their heads, and the hair on their forehead had an upward turn like some women have. They call it bangs, among women's hairdos. Nowadays the old lady could have been anything between 40 to 70 years old. She was over 7 feet tall. She would be about 500-600 pounds. She had very wide hips, and a goose-like walk. She was not built for beauty or speed. Some of those lovable brassieres and uplifts would have been a great improvement on her looks and her figure. The man's eye teeth were longer than the rest of the teeth, but not long enough to be called tusks. The old man must have been near 8 feet tall. Big barrel chest and big hump on his back, powerful shoulders, his biceps on upper arm were enormous and tapered down to his elbows. His forearms were longer than common people have, but well proportioned. His hands were wide, the palm was long and broad and hollow like a scoop. His fingers were short in proportion to the rest of the hand. His fingernails were like chisels. The only place they had no hair was inside their hands and the soles of their feet and upper part of the nose and eyelids. I never did see their ears, they were covered with hair hanging over them. If the old man were to wear a collar, it would have to be at least 30 inches. I have no idea what size shoes they would need. I was watching the young fellow's foot one day when he was sitting down. The soles of his feet seemed to be padded like a dog's foot, and the big toes was longer than the rest and very strong. In mountain climbing, all he needed was footing for his big toe. They were very agile. To sit down, they turned their knees out and came straight down. To rise, they came straight up without help of their hands and arms. I don't think this valley was their permanent home. I think they moved from place to place, as food is available in different localities. They might eat meat, but I never saw them eat meat, or do any cooking. I think this was probably a stopover place, and the plants with sweet roots on the mountainside might have been in season this time of the year. They seem to be most interested in them. The roots have a very sweet and satisfying taste. They always seem to do everything for a reason, wasted no time on anything they did not need. When they were not looking for food, the old man and the old lady were resting, but the boy and the girl were always climbing something or some other exercise. His favorite position was to take hold of his feet with his hands and balance on his rump, then bounce forward. The idea seems to be to see how far he could go without his feet or hands touching the ground. Sometimes he made 20 feet. But what do they want with me? They must understand that I cannot stay here indefinitely. I will soon run out of grub, and so far I have seen no deer or other game. I will soon have to make a break for freedom. Not that I was mistreated in any way. One consolation was that the old man was coming closer each day, and was very interested in my snuff. Watching me when I take a pinch of snuff. He seems to think it is useless to only put it inside my lips. One morning after I had my breakfast, both the old man and the boy came and sat down only 10 feet away from me. This morning I made coffee. I had saved up all dry branches I found, and I had some dry moss, and I used all the labels from cans to start a fire. I got my coffee pot boiling, and it was strong coffee too, and the aroma from boiling coffee was what brought them over. I was sitting eating hardtack with plenty of butter on, and sipping coffee. And it sure tasted good. I was smacking my lips pretending it was better than it really was. I set the can down that was about half full. I intended to warm it up later. I pulled out a full box of snuff, took a big chew. Before I had time to close the box, the old man reached for it. I was afraid he would waste it, and only had two more boxes. So I held on to the box intending him to take a pinch like I had just done. Instead, he grabbed the box and emptied it in his mouth. Swallowed it in one gulp. Then he licked the box inside with his tongue. After a few minutes, his eyes began to roll over in his head. He was looking straight up. I could see he was sick. Then he grabbed my coffee can that was quite cold by this time. He emptied that in his mouth, grounds and all. That did no good. He stuck his head between his legs and rolled forwards a few times away from me. Then he began to squeal like a stuck pig. I grabbed my rifle. I said to myself, this is it. If he comes for me, I will shoot him plumb between his eyes. But he started for the spring. He wanted water. I packed my sleeping bag in the pack sack with a few cans I had left. The young fellow ran over to his mother. Then she began to squeal. I started for the opening in the wall, and I just made it. The old lady was right behind me. I fired one shot at the rock over her head. I guess she had never seen a rifle fired before. She turned and ran inside the wall. I injected another shell in the barrel of my rifle and started downhill, looking back over my shoulder every so often to see if they were coming. I was in a canyon, and good traveling, and I made fast time. Must have made 3 miles in some world record time. I came to a turn in the canyon and I had the sun on my left. That meant I was going south and the canyon turned west. I decided to climb the ridge ahead of me. I knew I must have two mountain ridges between me and salt water, and by climbing this ridge I would have a good view of this canyon, so I could see if the Sasquatch were coming after me. I had a light pack and was making good time up this hill. I stopped after to look back to where I came from, but nobody followed me. As I came over the ridge I could see Mount Baker. Then I knew I was going in the right direction. I was hungry and tired. I opened my pack sack to see what I had to eat. I decided to rest here for a while. I had a good view of the mountainside, and if the old man was coming I had the advantage because I was above him. To get me he would have to come up a steep hill. And that might not be so easy after stopping a few 30-30 bullets. I had made up my mind this was my last chance. And this would be a fight to the finish. I ate some hard tack and I opened my last can of corned beef. I had no butter. I forgot to pick up my butter sealer I had buried near my camp to keep it cold. I did not dare to make a fire. I rested here for 2 hours. It was 3 p.m. when I started down the mountainside. It was nice going, not too steep, and not too much underbrush. When I got near the bottom, I shot a big blue grouse. She was sitting on a windfall, looking right at me, only 100 feet away. I shot her neck right off. I made it down to the creek at the bottom of this canyon. I felt I was safe now. I made a fire between two big boulders, roasted the grouse, made some coffee and opened my can of milk. My first good meal for days. I spread out my sleeping bag under a big spruce tree and went to sleep. Next morning when I woke up, I was feeling terrible. My feet were sore from dirty socks. My legs were sore, my stomach was upset from that grouse that I ate the night before. I was not sure I was going to make it up that mountain. It was a cloudy day, no sun, but after some coffee and hard tack I felt a bit better. I started up the mountainside but had no energy. I only wanted to rest. My legs were shaking. I had to rest every 100 feet. I finally made the top, but it took me 6 hours to get there. It was cloudy, visibility about a mile. I knew I had to go downhill. After about 2 hours I got down to the heavy timber and sat down to rest. I could hear a motor running hard at times, then stop. I listened to this for a while and decided the sound was a gas donkey. Someone was logging in the neighborhood. I made for this sound, for if only I can get to that donkey, I will be safe. After a while I hear someone holler timber and a tree go down. Now I knew I was safe. When I came up to the fellows, I guess I was a sorry sight. I hadn't had a shave since I left Toba Inlet, and no good wash for days. When I came up out of the bushes, they kept staring at me. I asked where the place was and how far to the nearest town. The men said, "You look like a wild man, where did you come from?" I told them I was a prospector and was lost. I had not had much to eat the last few weeks. I got sick from eating a grouse last night, and I am all in. The bucker called to his partner, "Pete, come over here a minute." Pete came over and looked at me and said, "This man is sick. We had better help him down to the landing, put him on a logging truck and send him down to the beach." I did not like to tell them I had been kidnapped by a Sasquatch, as if I had told them, they would probably have said, "He is crazy too." They were very helpful and they talked to the truck driver to give me a ride down to the beach. Pete helped me up into the truck cab, and said the first aid man will fix you up at the camp. The first aid man brought me to the cook and asked, "Have you a bowl of soup for this man?" The cook came and looked me over. He asked, "When did you eat last, and where did you come from?" I told him I had been lost in the wood. I ate a grouse last night and it made me sick. After the cook had given me a first-class meal, the first aid man took me to the first aid house. I asked, "Can you get me a clean suit of underwear and a pair of socks? I would like a bath, too," he said. "Sure thing, you take a rest and I will fix all that. I'll arrange for you to go down to Seashell when the timekeeper goes down for mail." After a session in the bathroom, the first aid man gave me a shave and a hair trim, and I was back to my normal self. The bull of the woods told me I was welcome to stay for a day and rest up if I liked. I told him I accepted his hospitality as I was not feeling any too good yet. I told about my prospecting, but nothing about being kidnapped by a Sasquatch. The following day I went down from this camp on the Salmon Arm branch of Seashelt Inlet. From there I got the Union boat back to Vancouver. That was my last prospecting trip, and my only experience with what is known as Sasquatches. I know that in 1924 there were 4 Sasquatches living. It might be only 2 now. The old man and the old lady might be dead by this time. From when I was young, I've heard personal stories from friends and family, from ghost children to euthanized pets running through people's houses, but I'll stick to my personal experiences for now. When I was younger, around elementary school, we moved into our second house, a fixer-upper that had been sitting for a while. Later on, when my parents would be working and it was just me and my older sister, We would hear at points that someone was moving around upstairs and we had to have her boyfriend clear the house cause we would be too afraid to go back inside. Another instance was that the master bathroom had a door that was fogged glass and I would see a shadow passing by and I would be waiting with a bat outside the door if anyone had somehow managed to get through the house and hide in the closet that was conjoined to it. The house was saged and scripture was painted on the walls and we didn't have much if any issues after that. When I was in high school I was told of a past librarian who died in front of the school and was known to haunt the art, music, and theater classes which were all right next to each other. I had almost forgotten about it till my junior year when we would hold a film club in the theater. A classmate had a speak box app on their phone and decided to mess around with it after we finished our meeting. After a few minutes of silence a few words appeared that the phone picked out and the changing radio channel starting with, car accident and library. The app started describing pieces of clothing that we were wearing as well as the names of the people in the room and the names were not very common, to say the least. After that, I was frightened to be messing with that stuff so I left immediately feeling pretty creeped out. I was a bit skeptical that the app could have been tampered with or the experience rigged. But later in the year, I had my own personal experience. I would skip lunch sometimes, the cafeteria being across the hall from the theater, and I would practice a song I was going to use for the talent show, on the only other piano in the school. I had begun to hear noises from the balcony, I stopped playing and asked if anyone was there. Students would sometimes practice their scripts upstairs. But after seeing no one was there from a glance I continued practicing. And not shortly after a single light above me turned off and on I wasn't thinking much about it until I heard a crash. On the balcony there was a row of fake office trees lined up in one corner of the wall, and one had toppled over. Thinking someone was messing with me I sprinted up the stairs that were adjacent to the piano and looked around finding no evidence of anyone. I fixed the fallen tree back into its upright state and went back downstairs to the piano, yet as I was about to start, I turned and looked back at the spot the tree had fallen and saw an adult-sized black silhouette move from those trees into the sound booth in the center of the back wall. My thoughts of it being someone was no longer possible. The issue was that the only door into the booth was on the opposite side of the balcony and the shape had walked through cinder blocks where the sound booth protruded from the back wall. I sat a bit panicked but I apologized if I was bothering them or it and if it had an issue with me still practicing I could go. Nothing else happened so I got halfway through playing another verse before feeling too creeped out to be in there and left feeling I had handled my first paranormal experience pretty well. My next experiences happened after moving out of Tennessee and to Fernandina Beach, Florida. Amelia Island, where the town is located, has had a lot of history, having been captured 7 times by nations, pirates, and militants. It is not surprising that there would be instances of ghosts. I worked as a bellman for a small coastal hotel. I had been told that the place had a ghost they called the captain who would turn on or off TVs or move around supplies while housekeeping was working. Still, I hadn't given it much thought. But looking back I'd noticed that at random times when I would walk through those halls, I swore I would see a thin column of smoke moving past me like a thin cloud. I would stop and walk backward to see if it was a trick of the light or try and smell if a guest was smoking, but there would be no smell and I could not recreate the sight of the smoke, which now I very much think were apparitions. 8 months working there I was riding the elevator with our head cook at the time to the lobby when I started to hear a phone ringing. "Are you going to answer that, young man?" said to the chef, and I realized the ringing was coming from inside the elevator and I opened an access panel that I was unaware of to find an office phone. I answered it as the chef exited on the lobby floor, and I gave the hotel name and usual greeting and asked what I could do for them. An elderly woman's voice could be heard, though her voice was so raspy it was a bit difficult to understand what the phone call was for, but when I understood what she was asking for I was more confused. She had asked for an employee who worked there, and when I told them that the name they gave didn't belong to anyone I worked with, they asked to talk to another name I had not heard before. When I said I wasn't sure who they were trying to reach, the call dropped. After relaying the unusual information to the owner, they said that the first name was of an employee that died in a car wreck before the hotel was bought by them. The second name was the previous owner's who had also passed. How did someone get a hold of a phone number to an elevator had me confused, especially from someone who had no connection to the hotel for over 7 years. Feeling a bit weirded out by the experience, I tried to redial the last call, but the phone number was inactive. So I continued on with my work, trying to push the memory aside. Later that year, a new cook took the position and we got along well. The elevator had been opening on the lobby floor with no one inside and closing, and I chalked it up to it being some wiring or some other reason, but as I was at the desk, the cook got off the elevator and she was on her phone. She said that the camera app kept getting pulled up and then it took a selfie of her. She then flipped the camera and took another photo.
Although she was in the elevator alone, a tall black man was looming in the elevator in front of her, with only his face being somewhat distinguishable, but as if he was standing in a dark room despite the elevator being well lit.
We both were quiet and had the heebie-jibs about the photo, so I sent it to my family, who are very religious. My grandmother said it was a demon and not to acknowledge or interact with the entity, and I was quick to oblige that I would not try to make any new pen pals with the deceased. The final instance was about a year later, as my ex at the time and I stayed in the Keys for a bit, helping with her father to flip a couple houses. We were staying at one of them that was about finished. We had wrapped up for the night and we just got into bed at around midnight. After a few minutes of laying down, two loud knocks happened right above our heads on the wall, as if someone had a warrant, but behind us was the interior of the house. We both jumped and I got up and immediately opened the bedroom door into the hall. You could hear her dad across the house sawing logs still, and it was only us three in the entire house. I walked around the whole house and all the doors were locked. When we woke in the morning, we were confirmed to what we already knew, that the house was haunted, since the house came cheaper due to the previous owner having died of old age in the house. I've not had any experiences since and I'd be fine with keeping it that way. I'm a police officer in Priest River. A little city that's real quiet, real peaceful. Less than 2,000 people, and about 50 of them work in the PD. I'd try to live up to the standards that young me believed in when I looked up to cops. I'm part of the community, I know all the ins and outs, and all the trouble, so when the radio buzzed about a disturbance at the RV park, I figured it was the usual suspects. Randy, drunk off his ass fighting with his wife again, or something of the sort. I told dispatch I'd handle it. As I pulled in, there was some dust in the air like somebody had sped off like a bat out of hell. Dispatch radioed in again and said something about shots being fired. Not really unusual, but I did make sure my gun was ready. It wouldn't be an odd thing if some drunks were off firing at the river again, but something didn't feel right. I started walking towards one of the trailers of the usual suspects and knocked on the door. I heard some slight muttering and banging around. Randy came out. He surprisingly wasn't drunk this time. He was wearing his usual dirty tank top and old sweatpants. He'd actually trimmed his beard for once, and his bald head looked like it wasn't sunburnt. Maybe the house arrested him good. "Oh hey Jake, what's up? I swear me and my old lady ain't fighting no more," he said a bit hurriedly. "You hear about them gunshots? 'Cause I think some boys are just down by the river. But while you're here." His voice trailed off. He shook himself and looked at me with a cold expression. "There's something out here that just ain't right. Might be some like raccoon or something, but it's been digging around all over the damn place and knocking over shit. Hey, maybe those boys were taking pot shots at the thing," he said. He was smiling, but he was sweating profusely. "All right, Randy," I said, patting him on the shoulder. "Glad to hear that you're not fighting with your wife. Mind if I talk to her real quick?" I asked. He nodded, then yelled into the RV. His wife yelled at him to F off and go back to bed, and I took that as a sign she was still alive, so I left it at that. "Never mind, she sounds busy. I'm just gonna do a quick look around, and if nothing's going on, then I'll be out of here. If you hear anything, holler." "Sure thing, Jake," he said, then looked away from me and sighed. "I should thank you while you're here. If you're ever not on the clock, I'd like to grab a beer with you, he said with a reluctant smile. I nodded. Sure. I'll swing by the bar sometime. I should get to searching now, I said, and waved. He waved back before returning inside and switching off the lights. It was dark again, so I shined my flashlight around. After taking a few steps from his porch, I stepped into some black powder. I crouched down and ran it through my fingers. It was incredibly fine. The hell is this? I took a whiff. Smells like charcoal? Is that all it is? I looked it over. Somebody must have dumped a bag out. I kept walking around, trying not to shine the light in any windows. The moon was starting to come through the clouds, and out of the corner of my eye I noticed something darting between the RVs. Hey, I shouted. Police. If there's anybody there, come out. I pointed my light in the direction. Dead silence, no footsteps, not even a peep. Might be the raccoon. I started to slowly approach the area when a voice called out. Hello? Somebody over here shouting? A young voice said. I turned around and saw one of the Tanner boys standing with a varmint rifle. Oh hey there, Officer McKinley. Hey. I replied slowly, looking him over. It was Sam Tanner, the eldest. He was wearing a baseball cap to cover his unruly dark hair, and his blue-gray eyes seemed to wander, sharply eyeing the surroundings. Sam, what are you doing out here? I asked. You should be in bed, or at the very least at home. Sorry, officer. I just couldn't sleep. He muttered. This damn noise been bothering me all night, sounded like somebody beating a trash can with a mallet. Wanted to see if it was one of them damned coons out here, he said, shifting his gaze to behind me. You looking for it too? If you shoot it, can I bring it home to Pa? You can make all kinds of stuff from a dead coon. One of them Davy Crockett hats, and maybe he stopped dead in his tracks. His voice cracked and an instant wave of dread fell over me as I quickly turned around. Something about his size looked at me, but it wasn't human, nor any kind of animal I'd ever seen. The thing had long jet black fur that blended into the night and covered every inch of its body, huge eyes that I couldn't seem to look directly at, and sharp teeth that matched its even sharper claws. I quickly drew my gun and pointed it at the damn thing, but I paused a moment as it cocked its head at me and made a low grunt. What in the hell? I muttered before it swiped a claw at me, the vicious claws tearing through the air, narrowly missing my chest. I didn't hesitate now. I fired off a shot, the bullet smashed through its chest. It screamed in agony, an ungodly, horrific scream that haunts my nightmares. It sounded like an amalgamation of voices, both that I could recognize and some that I'd never heard. It kept screaming until it slowly started to break apart. It pointed a sharp claw behind me, at Sam, before it crumbled and slowly turned to dust. The dust burst into the air and I covered my mouth and nose. Sam gasped, and I turned to look at him. Are you okay, kid? I asked as my eyes met his. He started shaking uncontrollably, he fell to his knees and vomited. His body hit the ground, and he began convulsing as if he was having a seizure. I kept my mouth covered as I dragged him away from the dust cloud and over to my cruiser. I finally felt it was safe to breathe, so I uncovered my mouth. Dispatch, send an ambulance to the RV park off of 57 ASAP, I shouted into my radio. We have a teenager who inhaled an unknown substance. He's seizing violently and may go into shock. Dispatch relayed the ambulance was on the way along with backup, but I didn't respond. I had to help Sam. His skin turned pale, and his pulse began rapidly going up. The ambulance might not arrive on time, I had to do something. He went into shock. I tried my best to keep him alive, but by the time the ambulance arrived, he was gone. Patches of skin around his throat and face had turned a sickly black color. The whole damn RV park was awake now. Gunshots followed by sirens? The whole countryside would wake up for less. They kept staring at me, nobody offered any help. They just looked at me through their windows, some even peeking out their doors. I didn't say anything to them. What could I say? My mind was overwhelmed by all of it, but the haunting image of that creature kept flashing through my mind, and that unholy screeching. Backup arrived moments before the ambulance. They came upon me cradling the poor kid in my arms. The two officers tried to console me, but I was lost in my own mind. I kept thinking about how much I had inhaled myself. Am I going to suffer the same fate? What the hell was that thing? These thoughts buzzed around my head as a good friend slapped me into consciousness. As I came back, I watched the paramedics lift Sam's lifeless body into the back of the ambulance. Jake, get a hold of yourself. This ain't your first rodeo, man. My friend, Tom, said as he shook me. Come on, get it together. What the hell happened out here? He asked. I wiped the sweat from my brow and asked myself, would he believe me? Could he believe me? What I'd just seen was closer to demonic than anything I'd ever witnessed in the world. I looked at Tom with some hope. He'd seen crazy things in LA, maybe he would believe this. Tom, you remember that time you told me about that fellow on bath salts who broke an arm and then used the protruding bone to try and stab you? I asked. He nodded. And you remember that guy who jumped off a four-story building and kept sprinting, right? Yeah. That crazy bastard just kept going. Like a chicken with its head cut off until he just fell over, he said with a pause, then looked at me. You look like you've seen the devil himself. What the hell happened? That might be closer to the truth than you think. I muttered. He stared at me, sternly. I looked him in the eyes with the most serious expression I could muster. You gotta be kidding me, he said, and I shook my head. All right, well just tell me what happened. I recounted the events as they played out, trying to give him as much detail as possible. What Randy said, everything that happened to Sam, and that damn thing's features. So it's dust? He asked. I nodded. He went to the back of his car and pulled out two respirators and a bag. We'll need a sample, if you're dead serious. I don't know what else could have made Sam look like that. But, he trailed off. Put it on and let's take a look, he said. I put on the respirator, praying that the filter would be enough to keep us safe. We went back to where it happened. Tom flicked on his flashlight and looked at the dust. It looks like graphite. You know, the crap you use to lube locks? He asked. I nodded. It was a remarkably fine textured substance, the same as the dust I'd first encountered. Had somebody already killed one? I already breathed in some from that. How much until I die? I made sure my respirator was tight and looked at Tom. Don't breathe any in if you don't want to end up like Sam. I muttered. He nodded, and kept looking it over with an intense expression. He bagged as much as he could and then covered the rest with some dirt. I'm gonna see if the crime lab will analyze this shit. God knows what it is if it does that crap. He muttered. Might be some kind of hallucinogenic or some kind of drug. An overdose might do that shit to you, but we'll have to wait until the autopsy comes back. Hallucinogenic? Could that have been it? Did I just hallucinate everything and shoot a pile of that dust? Is that why Sam died? Did I kill Sam? I started shaking as I walked back to my car. I sat in my car for a while with the engine running, the cool air blowing on my sweaty face. God knows what that is. God knows what it'll do to me. Will I be addicted? Will I suffer withdrawals? Is it even a drug, or is that the blind hope I have that I didn't just witness Satan's minion cruelly murder a boy? 2 days passed since then. The crime lab had analyzed the substance. Whatever it was unknown. It had a similar texture to graphite, and smelled like charcoal. It burns like gunpowder and hangs in the air for a long time. Tests on mice have concluded similar effects as to what happened to Sam. After the autopsy, the cause of death was clear, and horrifying no less. Internal bleeding and respiratory failure. Apparently, once inhaled, the substance begins to attack every system it encounters. Respiratory, digestive, nervous. It plays havoc with them. The body rejects the substance by attempting to vomit, to force it out, and by coughing, but once it settles in your lungs it's too late. Necrosis sets in rapidly as tissue near it begins to die and decay at a horrifying rate. What's worse is that it decays most substances it comes into contact with. Traces of my bullet were found. But, my bullet didn't hit the pile, but it was covered in dust. It was fired from a standing angle as if I'd shot it right at a person, and it was found lodged in a tree. It had decayed as if it had been in a river for 2 decades. They assume the bullet caused dust to kick up because of the muzzle velocity. I've been put on paid leave for the time being, they said after a psychological evaluation and a quick drug test I'd be back on. I want to agree with the psychiatrist, it must have been a hallucination. The dust kicked up because of the supersonic speed of the bullet. I'd already had a small dose from before, that's what started my hallucinations. Sam just took too much in while I covered myself, saving my own ass. It all makes sense. At least, I want it too. But it's just itching at the back of my head, that night I can't forget. As much as it all makes sense, it feels wrong, it doesn't feel like that's why things happen the way they did. I'll just let the doc tell me what I should believe, and go along with it. But, if I ever get the chance, I'll get some proof. I swear I will, if not to avenge Sam, then to save myself from going crazy.